Welcome into the KSO show. I am Mason Voth. That is Drew Galloway. Time for your instant reaction after K-State finishes up the Rate Bowl with Rutgers, or should I call it the Great Bowl, Drew? Because once again, this game absolutely delivered. Not just, I mean, the Rutgers and K-State fans probably wanted to murder themselves at one point, but everybody else that watched this that was an independent observer probably enjoyed the heck out of that game. Both of the first two bowl games of the day, incredible if you're just somebody that was with family and you turned the game on. And then not to mention the next game starts 10 points immediately for Arkansas State, and then Bowling Green on a fake ends up throwing a touchdown. So it's been a good start to the bowl season post-Christmas for everybody else. And
even, you know, Christmas Eve, Hawaii Bowl was a banger.
Yeah, I mean, what, we had 11 overtimes over the Christmas Eve to post-Christmas Day bridge. That's pretty good, pretty fun to go that way. And now if you look at the history of the Rate Bowl, here are the games that you've gotten. So K-State Rutgers, obviously an all-timer this year. KU and UNLV was a really good game last year. KU ended up winning 49-36, but UNLV made a little bit of a comeback, made it very interesting. Wisconsin, Oklahoma State went down to the wire in 2022. That was a 24-17 Wisconsin win. Minnesota, West Virginia. I mean, what do you think? It's a Neil Brown, PJ Fleck bowl game. So that was a clunker. Air Force, Washington State, fine, whatever, 31-21. Everybody remembers TCU and Cal 10-7 in overtime in 2018. And then don't forget K-State and Alex Delton running all over UCLA. Not as great of a game, but a great outcome for the Cats, who have now won three straight bowl games in the state of Arizona. The Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl in 13, the Cactus Bowl in 17, and now the Rate Bowl here in 2024. As Avery Johnson, he did set the single season touchdown record with 25. He got three in this game. And then Dylan Edwards, phenomenal in his debut as a starting running back for K-State. And I've got some great takes for you coming later today. But one of them that I know a lot of people are probably going to have after seeing Dylan Edwards do that is, man, why was he not getting the ball in some of the ways that he did tonight in the first 12 games of the season? Because it wasn't just, hey, here's the ball, go run, which he did on a 65-yard touchdown. It was K-State bringing him in with some sweeps or doing some other things to get him creatively involved. And he had a phenomenal game. Joe Jackson was really good in it as well. I think it was just one of those where if Dylan Edwards wasn't as hot as he was, it probably would have been a more balanced game. But this team realized that Dylan Edwards had it going tonight. So impressive performance from him, and a good comeback for K-State to finish the season with a 9th win. So we'll get the initial thoughts from Drew before we dive into anything too specific, because I know as much as people are probably glad K-State won, there's a lot of people out there that still probably feel like they lost with how bad it looked at times.
I'm going to say that this is kind of just what bowl season is about. It's a fun, unique environment playing at Chase Field against a team that you have only played two times in your history, which is wild when you consider like how long Rutgers has been playing football, that the only time that the two teams have played has been in bowl games. Not a lot of defense, which, I mean, we'll get into, but that's a lot more fun, I think, than like a clunky 10-7 Cheez-It Bowl at the time TCU Cal game was. So it was kind of just what bowl season is. And it was funny during the game to see a lot of people kind of that were, ugh, bowl games don't even matter, like in the lead up to the game, being upset and during the game, and then like doing a 180 again after the win. But fun game. I will start the Dylan Edwards discussion on how he was used tonight and say, I think that they tried during the season, but I pointed it out in Players of the Game. K-State's perimeter blocking hasn't been this good all season long. And like, that is how Dylan Edwards will get his chunk plays and get his big yards, because he's not a guy that can go between the tackles like DJ Giddens can and Joe Jackson can. Like, the perimeter blocking has to be good for his plays to really pop. And it was as good as it's been, I would even venture to say, in the Chris Klieman era tonight, because it didn't matter who was getting the ball on the perimeter. The blocking was excellent. And it is a little bit ironic and this isn't a call out to Keegan Johnson, but like he was by far the best perimeter blocker K-State had. And the first game that K-State doesn't have him is when the blocking is excellent. So I will say that they have tried in creative ways to get Dylan Edwards the ball in space. The execution and the blocking just was bad. And today it was really, really good.
Well, and you think of other ways that K-State has kind of failed in getting him involved this year. Go to the Iowa State game, starting the game with the fumble that ends up happening on that play where a lot of people look at it and say, man, if you execute, he's gone for a touchdown. That's not on how K-State was using him there. That's on the players not making the play, which I think that's a conversation that really has to get boiled down here when we talk about the, you know, people want to throw Connor Riley overboard. They want to throw Joe Klanderman overboard. And tonight was, boy, if they had lost that, it's a near certainty that you would have needed to have made a move with the way that the season would have collapsed. But I also don't think you need to totally just say, well, we won, it's all fine, let's move on, let's keep this going. I think you still have to seriously analyze some of the things going on here. But tonight, for the most part, they executed in getting Dylan Edwards the ball in certain ways. The only way that they didn't, and I think it, at this point, it's a lost cause. You just got to stop trying to do it. As it currently stands, Avery Johnson can't make that throw to Dylan Edwards. You know, the deep shots to Dylan Edwards, like Edwards' speed can get him open, but Avery isn't as 100% solid of a passer yet as you would like. And in addition to that, when you're throwing to a guy Dylan Edwards' size, that makes that pass all that much tougher because there is a very specific place the ball can go there, and it has to be out in front of him. It can't be right where it needs to be because I think even that still gets deflected by the defender if he's right there. But that's the only nitpick I have is that we've probably seen enough at this point to where unless Dylan Edwards has got 15 yards of separation, maybe don't throw that ball because it hasn't worked out. And too many times this year it's been like, oh, it's there, but that pass never once has hit. Or, you know, maybe Dylan Edwards is too fast because Avery Johnson hit DJ Giddens doing that. So I guess maybe he just needs a slower running back getting open in space like that. Although when DJ did it, he tended to not have a DB within 40 yards of him. No. So
I'll also add, like, they didn't connect on that play, but that might have been one of my favorite play calls of the entire game, was to bring him in that jet motion and then run the wheel off of it. And it is crazy. Like, you think about how they missed that one and then didn't end up scoring on that drive. If they hit on that, Dylan Edwards is pushing 300 yards from scrimmage tonight with four touchdowns. Like, I think the running back room is going to be fine going forward.
Yeah, they pretty much locked in. Hey, no more concerns here with that. They're going to get this figured out. And you look at the final numbers, Edwards over 220 yards of total offense, the three touchdowns. Jackson ends up with, once it all finals out, he ends up with 87 total yards in the game and one touchdown. He got that touchdown that he deserved from the Tulane game. And I started thinking this early in the game. And I don't know if I sent it to you guys, but I sent it to some. And I think that there is a very real possibility that not having DJ Giddens and having these types of running backs and Dylan Edwards and Joe Jackson back there helped Connor Riley call a better game. I think that when you have DJ Giddens, you know what his style is. And obviously he's a really good running back. You want to give him the football, but and he's going to be out there 80% of the snaps or more at running back. But, you know, you can kind of get in this rhythm of what you're doing is, yeah, like you're saying, it's downhill. You're hand it off. A lot of it's between the tackles, and it's just straightforward football that you saw played 70 years ago. Here you go, running back, run through the line, see if you get through. Let's see what happens. Now, without DJ Giddens and having to worry about how do we incorporate DJ Giddens and then making that kind of flow with everything else we do offensively, it felt like the way that this team is constructed lends itself more to performing, I think, at a higher level with the two running backs that you had tonight in Jackson and Edwards, and with Connor Riley being able to devote 100% of the game to that, I think that was an added benefit. So that will be something to watch moving forward into next year, and something that I think should give people serious optimism about the offense if Connor Riley remains in place as the offensive coordinator, is that, I mean, we saw Connor Riley as the OC last year in the Pop-Tarts Bowl, and NC State was a better team than Rutgers, a better defensive team for sure than Rutgers. But even still, this was a much better performance from the K-State offense than it was last year against NC State, even if you're going to try and, you know, make the conversation relative. So that was something to me that stood out early on that I thought about, where I go, you know, I think this might make it better and easier for Connor Riley to call the offense.
There was more creativity tonight than we'd seen all season. And I think that that is kind of just the culmination of this is just now Connor Riley's 14th game as an offensive play caller. So you kind of got to see a little bit of everything. I mean, there was a play where Joe Jackson took the snap, handed it off to Avery, and then Avery ended up giving it to Dylan Edwards. And like, we just hadn't seen that in the first 12 games of the season. So you got to see a little bit more. And I do think that he was really dialed in. And these are the kinds of players that you want to get them out in space, as opposed to DJ Giddens. And that's no offense to DJ, because DJ is a top at least 5 running back in school history. But now you have guys that can score pretty much every time that they get the ball in the backfield, because it was a quiet night for Joe Jackson because of just how good that Dylan Edwards was. If you look at the stats, Joe Jackson ends the game with 7.1 yards per carry on the ground and averaging over 12 yards a catch when he got the ball. So these are big play guys right now. And I think that it's fun to think about a backfield with them next season. So you kind of take this game and you can really grow from it on offense, because you got to see the total package. I mean, who on their bingo card tonight had Ty Bowman getting a jet sweep? Like, that's how it was going for K-State.
I mean, look, think back. You and I talked about it after the first spring practice of the year, or a fall camp of the year, and we saw a ton of jet sweeps in the practice that we watched. We thought it might be involved in the offense. It wasn't involved as much this year as I think people thought or would have liked. I don't know that we ever saw Ty Bowman involved in one of them in those practices. But yeah, he came through. And again, that goes back to what we talked about at various points this year, is that Ty Bowman got on the field more because K-State trusted him and they knew that he would do the right thing and be able to survive out there on his own. And that was a play where I think if you give it to a different receiver, you know, there may be a couple others that could have done this. He handled that like a patient runner, like what you would want somebody to do when, you know, the blocks weren't totally there. He kind of had a way turn a little, like there was some thinking that was involved in it, as opposed to, you know, I think a lot of these guys, they get the jet sweep and then they're like, okay, I'm running laterally. I'm going to keep running laterally. Like, at some point you have to turn up field and you also have to try and be a playmaking runner, as opposed to just force gumping it with your running, going straight, 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 hard turn, straight, straight, straight. Like, Ty Bowman had that tonight. That was another moment where you just look at and say they could trust him on the field, and he came through in the moment where they needed him.
And by the way, that wasn't just like a throwaway play. It's a 2-score game on a 3rd and 6 in case it's calling a jet sweep. That's why my initial reaction to that play call was I half expected him to throw it. Yeah. And then until it was pointed out that he is left-handed, so that probably would have been a tough play for him.
Yeah, it would have made it tough.
But on 3rd and 6, Connor Riley and Matt Wells had enough trust in Ty Bowman to give him a jet sweep in a crucial point at 3rd and 6 from the Rutgers 15, down 2 possessions. So I think that does show just how much that they trusted him and just how creative the offense was tonight, because that was nowhere near what I thought the play call was going to be when it ended up happening.
Yeah. Other notables offensively, Jace Brown, 5 catches for 60 yards. He was really good early in the game. And then Dante Cephas and Jaden Jackson, only 3 catches combined for the two of them and 55 yards. But both of them had crucial catches at a couple of points in the game from Avery Johnson, who finishes the night 15 of 30, 195 yards, 3 touchdowns, the pick. And he ends up running for 57 yards and a touchdown as well. I think that was a showcase a little bit more of a healthy Avery Johnson, how the run game can be impactful in this thing. But I do want to hit on this, and this will fall in the negative category from this game, is that there are still, to me, honestly, more than I was expecting, more questions than I would have thought there'd be after the first full year of Avery Johnson as a starting quarterback when it comes to him throwing the football. I think some of his decision making maybe regressed a little bit this year versus what we saw in the Pop-Tarts Bowl. Like, that was where I thought, man, I thought some of the throwaways were really good last year, but we've seen a lot more backpedaling, trying to evade. It got him in trouble with the safety at Iowa State. He threw the bad pick tonight. That's the number one area where he has to grow next year. The completion percentage has to go up a little bit more, and you got to get the decision-making turned around. People should not be as negative and down on it as they are. And the number one thing that's really bothered me a lot of this season is just how quickly people want to go to trying to call Avery Johnson soft for the running thing. I think now that we've seen it over the last couple of games, he probably was banged up, and the Cincinnati game, he ran it a lot better. And then he ran it a lot better tonight. And I get it. Not great opponents, but he did better. And it looked like he didn't run soft tonight. That's for sure.
He also took some shots tonight when he ran the ball. By the way, totally off topic. Never schedule Rutgers, though, with Greg Schiano, because his teams are slimy and
gross. Yes. I wanted to get into that. And I wanted to make sure that I said it right here. Moms and dads, cover the ears of any small children watching this if they're within earshot, because I am going to use the S word. I thought about tweeting it out, but that was a little too harsh. But I'm okay with saying it because I feel this way, because he's always been about this. Number one, and this it's going to get worse, so the kids can keep listening for a little bit. Number one, he did the same kneel down crap when he was with the Buccaneers. And it was pathetic in the NFL. It's even more pathetic in college football, especially when it is a bowl game. Look, I'm not of the mindset that bowl games are just pointless and, you know, whatever. Like, you should still treat them like real games. You should still try to win. Because at the end of the day, K-State just got a 9th win, third straight season with 9 wins. Rutgers just got a 6-loss season for Rutgers. Try and spin that as a success. But come on. There are too many variables there where guys can get hurt. And it's pretty pathetic to do that when is the last time on a kneel down you saw a fumble happen or anything like that? Like, even when Schiano's done it, he's really the only guy that tries it. It has not been successful. Show me when this has worked for that to be a real thing that you do. But in addition to that, we had this stuff earlier in the game. There were some well-timed, trainer moments on the field tonight for Rutgers. But most of all, K-State going out there and getting ready for the first 2-point conversion. And boy, how convenient that Rutgers coach to player communication would break down in that moment. It just
seemed.
Yeah, it just all seemed pretty, pretty fishy. But again, back to the whole kneel down. Oh, let's go for it. Look, I get it. There's still time on the clock. You're still trying to play the game. That's not how you play any game. That's just not how you do it. And it just reinforced to me that, look, and that's part of the reason why Greg Schiano has made Rutgers respectable whenever he's been there, because I think it takes a certain type of person that can make Rutgers be successful. But now's when you can cover the ears of your children. Greg Schiano is a piece of shit. Like, I am 100% okay with saying that. He is a total piece of shit for that move, because there is no reason in that situation guys should be in that position to have their legs taken out. And it's, you know, all 5 linemen are at risk in that situation, because, like,
and it's the last game of the season.
They're all diving after the ball. So you're going to be at guys' feet and legs. And then obviously, you know, Avery Johnson's in there and other guys. Like, it was a bogus move when he was in the NFL. And it's even worse when you're doing it at the college football level. And, you know, on top of that, I mean, look at those defensive linemen. There were helmets hovering over that football. So, like, it was a poorly officiated game. I had a KU fan actually reply to one of my tweets. He pointed out that there were 27 penalties in last year's game, and that was accepted penalties in last year's game. And at the point where he tweeted me, it was 4. And basically, he and I were of the same conclusion. Like, it's a showcase that you can have such thing as too few or too many penalties. It's almost like the quarterback that ends the season with 2 interceptions, and you're like, man, he didn't turn the ball over a lot this year. It's like, I don't know, maybe he should take some shots down the field every once in a while. Like, there is a sweet spot for penalties in a game, and the game of football over 60 minutes is far too complex for there to be a situation where you only end up, let me see the final total in this game.
K-State had 5 and Rutgers had 1.
You finished the game with 6 penalties, and Rutgers only had 1 of those. The total penalty yards in the game was 52.
There was 2 times where K-State had a tight end open. Once it was Garrett Oakley, and once it was Braden Lofton, where they straight up got tackled.
The Lofton one was so bad, and then Dylan Edwards was hit late twice. That you know, you could have made the case for maybe blocks in the back, especially after K-State, you know, got tagged for it a couple times. But yeah, it was a brutal go of things there.
It was a really, really bad night for the guys on the stripes. ACC fans, I do not envy you for having those guys, because they were clowns.
Speaking of tough nights for guys with stripes, the K-State defense had stripes on their uniforms, and they had a bit of a tough night. They gave up 401 yards, and they bounced back well. They shut Rutgers down when they needed to, because K-State was able to go out and after the game was, you know, kind of getting into a scary territory for Rutgers, they went on 6 consecutive scoring drives that bridged into the start of the third quarter. And then K-State was able to come out and force a punt, a pick, a punt. They did give up a touchdown short field after the big punt return, which may have had a block on the back, and then a punt, and then the turnover on down. So they stepped up towards the end when they needed it. The pick goes to Daniel Cobbs. What did you make of the K-State defensive performance tonight, and how concerning is that moving forward?
Yeah, it was really bad. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. It was bad. It was approaching that 2023 Iowa State territory during the game. But it's good because they ended up winning, but you would like the adjustments to come, you know, sooner. There was a point, and I will give not just the K-State defense, but Joe Klannerman a little bit of slack for Rutgers was kind of calling the game a little bit differently than they had throughout the season. They aren't typically a team that was a slow mesh handoff kind of team, and they were tonight. And that is like one of the more annoying offenses to play against. It's why when Wake Forest has like big upsets or really good years, it's because that is part of their offense, is a slow mesh handoff and a slow mesh RPO game. So it was a kind of an up and down game. I liked what we saw from Zayshon Rich though in the entire second half. Like, he really grew up, and it really seemed to turn the tide a little bit for K-State when they went more Rich and Donovan McIntosh on the outside, which I think is an exciting thing for the future, because I mean, those guys, one is a redshirt freshman and one is a true freshman. So to see those guys really kind of take that step. And I think this kind of goes back to how poorly the officiating was played or was just made the entire game. But K-State really made an adjustment on how they played their corners. And I think that this is why they went to Rich and McIntosh when they were just letting guys just wail on each other when the ball was in the air, because Rich was extremely physical. McIntosh was extremely physical. I think Marquise Siegel had a play where he just out-physicaled the receiver because they weren't going to call pass interference. So I think that they adjusted there, and then you already know what K-State's going to do on 4th and 7 with the game on the line.
Oh, yeah.
Cover zero time, baby. And Zayshon Rich ends up making a great tackle, because there's definitely a path where the Rutgers receiver gets the first down, and Rich shut it down right away. And that's trusting a true freshman to be in cover zero with the game on the line.
Yeah, and look, here's the whole big picture thing for K-State in this game. There was a lot of bad, and there were a lot of things that, you know, give you a little bit of a second guess and concern going into next year. But number one, you got to love the fight that this team had and the fact that they didn't quit and that they came back. That is a big deal in this game, because K-State trailed 34-17 late in the third quarter. Like, it was getting late, and they needed a 65-yard run to basically jumpstart them. And then they had the fight to keep pushing. And then, you know, again, when Rutgers scores to start the fourth quarter, you could think to yourself, ah, crap. Well, you know, this thing just, it's not going to happen tonight. And they were able to bounce back and make it happen. And K-State deserves a ton of credit for that and the fight. But in particular, if you want to individualize this, Zayshon Rich started off the game really, really bad. It was, I mean, he got burnt for a big play. He had some serious struggles. But he is a true freshman, and obviously he's the only true freshman that's played any significant time this year, anywhere close to it.
Oh, that's played in every game.
Yeah, and he was – so obviously the staff trusts him. You see the size. He's got that. But the fact that he was then able to come back after having such a bad game like that and flip the script and become one of the better players later on when K-State needed him, it reminds me of Julius Brents in the Big 12 championship game against TCU, where Julius Brents was getting lit up by Quentin Johnston and was having one of the worst days that you could possibly have in that situation. But he came back a couple times where he forced a big fumble of Quentin Johnston, didn't give up, and he came up with a huge interception in the end zone, which, look, it's a lot more with Max Duggan throwing a classic Max Duggan ball, but Julius Brents was there and had the pick. And that's the kind of mentality that I think you have to have as Zayshon Rich, and I think that should give people some encouragement moving forward. Look, he's got to get better, but a lot of these guys do. A lot of the young guys that you're relying on next year, the expectation would be that they can get better, and that's typically how the offseason works for these guys. But Zayshon Rich deserves credit for how he flipped the game around.
Look at where Austin Romaine was last year, and look at how good he was this year. Like, it is – I'm going to say the S word now, so cover your ears, kids. Uh-oh. It is bullshit that Austin Romaine wasn't first-team All-Big 12.
I agree with that.
And we saw where he was last year, and he played a lot down the stretch because he had to, because there was no other linebackers left, but Romaine was kind of just in a special teams role and then kept growing and growing and growing. And now we're seeing Rich doing that. And he got big minutes against Colorado. He had big minutes tonight. I think that there's a world where he really grows and becomes a really good player. I mean, he was a guy that was extremely, extremely raw out of high school. And we're seeing him really kind of come into his own in that second half. I mean, the other thing that I think was really needed for this game, and we talked about it after the Iowa State game, was just the fight and the fire. When Zayshon Rich and Otto McIntosh made plays tonight, they were letting the Rutgers receivers have it. And I think that that's something that you just kind of need sometimes. You need guys that will be like, hey, I just knocked that down right in front of you.
Think of how many of the DBs we've talked to, in whether it's a transfer or the high school recruiting class this cycle, where we've asked them about, and we've only asked it to DBs about, what is your go-to, you know, to kind of talk some trash and get in the head of your, yeah, it's absolutely a part of playing that position. Now, there are times where I go, you know, I don't know that you need to be putting the seatbelt on after the ball was thrown 10 yards over a guy's head on first down. Like, you still got a couple more snaps this series to get through before we're celebrating here. But that is a position where you have to have that kind of mindset. Everybody thinks of, you know, wide receivers have to have a special type of mindset, which is basically like, we're the most disrespected guys on planet Earth. And then quarterbacks kind of have to be that even keeled type, you know, a little bit more in control of your emotions, but let it bust out at weird times. Everybody's like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that that guy had that in him. You know, like Will Howard telling Lawrence, Kansas, that was his effing house last year. You're like, oh my goodness, Will's doing this.
Well, I was even going to say, add in Avery doing the Dion celebration at Colorado.
Yeah. 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 You know, they're a little bit more specific in their moments, but I thought it was significant that Zayshon Rich was able to kind of turn the game around. And then how about your man Daniel Cobbs coming through with the big interception right there? Yeah. And K-State tried a ton of different players on the field tonight.
Yeah, Daniel Cobbs made a big play, and this was kind of like the Avery interception where it was kind of thrown right to Cobbs, but made a big play, caught the ball, which that's always step one with defenders, is he caught it. And then had a nice return until it got called back because Austin Moore might have touched the Rutgers receiver. That was the one where I think Chris Kleiman lost it the most.
But yeah, that was a good play. You can't put yourself in that position if you're Austin Moore to even be there, because it looked like he did. And even if he didn't officially shove him down, he put himself in the vicinity of doing that. And at least he thought about it, you know, or maybe even attempted to do it.
But that Cobb's interception, I think, is the one, because it happened right after the 65-yard run, that really sparked the comeback.
Yeah. One of the big things that the comeback did, K-State wins in an alternate uniform. Chris Klieman even addressed it after the game, screaming into a microphone that the alternate curse is done. What did you think of the white, purple, white out there tonight? And how many times should it be done next year now?
Who
should they play in the alternate uniforms next year? Because I don't know that they win in the alternates tonight if they're playing, you know, Arizona State.
I mean, you're a traditionalist, so you won't like what I have to say about this, but make that the standard home uniform. I don't need the silver pants. Make the silver pants be the game that is like, oh, it's a special game.
That's tough.
And
to
next year, wear alternates against North Dakota. Just play it safe.
Okay.
Against FCS.
Don't do it against Army. Don't do it in Ireland.
But I think that the good thing here is that they did win the game. Maybe we see more alternates kind of leak out as the years go on. Alternates might have died tonight if K-State loses.
Yeah, they absolutely would have, and I would have been even more on board with that. Here's the thing. K-State wins a game like that. This is, some fan bases would say it was the alternate uniforms that caused this to happen tonight. K-State fans, there are some out there that are probably of the belief that K-State was wearing a special set of silver pants under the white ones after halftime to get the turnaround started in the game. Look, it is silly, but it's a thing, and it's a good thing that K-State won, and they were able to put the white back in the rotation, at least maybe a little bit moving forward. But I think you're right. Come back, open the home season under the lights in the white, purple, white next year. That'd be a good way to get the season started. And yeah, I don't think you'd have to worry too much about North Dakota, but we'll see. I'm the idiot that thought this was only going to have 39 total points scored in the game, and K-State would win by 13. And that did not happen.
EA needs to add the white Power Cat helmet.
Yep, got to get on it.
No, so whoever's in charge of that, get on it.
Yep, absolutely got to get on it. We are going to get on out of here, but before we do that, a reminder that we will have a Sunday show. I got to figure out when I got to record that. I got to go to a wedding Sunday night, but we will have a Sunday show. We will talk more big picture end of the season football stuff. And then we will also probably talk a little bit about Big 12 basketball starting on Monday. We'll do it. Yeah. K-State football, boy. Cat fans, I know you needed this one tonight. I know you needed this one. So congratulations. But Drew, you know what I'm going to do here. You have an Ireland fact ready.
Oh, I'm dialed. You can do the ad read, and I'll pull up my fact sheet.
Okay, all right. Drew's got a fact sheet going here. Look, I want to tell everybody, you're probably watching this right now, surrounded by friends and family, and thinking and talking to yourself, man, I really forgot to get these guys something good for Christmas. Or maybe you're getting ready to open gifts if you're watching this on Friday or Saturday. Like, oh, crap, oh, crap. Do exactly what I tried saying to do during the preview show and just, you know, say, hey, I couldn't have them in my hands right now, but I got y'all the gift of Ireland for Christmas. Because whether it's for yourself or the Wildcat fan in your life, an incredible trip for the Aer Lingus College Football Classic is the perfect way to kick off the 2025 season. Enjoy all the sights, sounds, and excitement of Ireland while cheering on K-State in one of college football's most unique settings. Get ready for a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Visit cats2ireland.com to learn more. That's cats, the number 2, Ireland.com. All right, fact me.
All right, so for your fact today, it actually comes with a question first.
Okay.
There's two ways that this fact can go. How do you feel about snakes?
I hate snakes.
Well, that's a good thing that we're going to Ireland, because they do not have a snake.
Yeah.
No snake in Ireland. They are completely snake-free due to the Ice Age, actually.
I thought St. Patrick took care of that.
No, because St. Patrick was not born in Ireland. So,
where's St. Patrick from then?
England.
What was he doing in Ireland? Do you know?
No, I don't have that, but I know that he's not Irish.
Okay. Well, this to me, this seems like a this like something that there would be wars in public schools about how you teach this. Like, are we teaching evolution or creation? You know, like, how are we doing this? I guess you're giving us both sides here.
Yeah.
You know, you're giving one, I'm giving the other. I tend to believe that St. Patrick got rid of the snakes. It very well could have been the Ice Age, but did the Ice Age only impact the, you know, the Isle of Ireland? Also, aren't snakes built to handle cold weather when they go underground for the winter? Like,
I have
your story's not adding up here, Drew.
I have a lot of questions and not a lot of answers, but I know that Ireland is snake free.
Okay, well, that's good news. That means at least when I hit my ball in the gunch next year, when I'm playing some golf over there, that I don't have to worry about, you know, any snakes or critters in there. Well, there's probably some critters, but at least not snakes, and I can probably handle anything else that's thrown my way. But yeah, I'm amphibians, reptiles, arachnids, anything like that, I'm out on. I can't stand anything like that. I'm very glad that Indiana Jones, like, that was the one thing that man feared, was snakes. Like, it just goes to show that everybody should think that they are vile and disgusting creatures. So I hate them. They're terrible. Can't wait to get to Ireland to be in a land that has no snakes. It's going to be glorious. And K-State will get ready to start the 2025 football season. That's the next time you're going to be able to watch the Cats play, is over in Ireland against Iowa State, as they come off a third consecutive 9-win or better season under Chris Klieman. In addition to that, some other things to kind of tidy up. Dylan Edwards set a bowl game rushing record for K-State tonight with his yardage output. That's big time. Avery Johnson, as we already mentioned. And a rate bowl record, which I don't know if the rate bowl record was this, but Mitch Fortner told us this on Powercat Game Day. Do you know who the previous bowl game rushing record holder was?
At K-State?
Mm-hmm.
Alex Dalton.
Yeah, so he replaces Alex Dalton at the Cactus Bowl 7 years ago for doing that. So that is a notable deal as well. K-State sets the K-State season record as a team for average yards per rush. So that is another thing to kind of get thrown in there. I felt like there was another thing that I was going to bring up that was historical.
School record for points in a bowl game.
Oh, okay. Also, I know Avery Johnson now becomes the first K-State quarterback to win his first two bowl games that he started. So, you know, we now have a quarterback that's kind of in the rhythm of win one, lose one. No, that's over. Avery Johnson just wins bowl games, which means K-State needs to find a way to get to the postseason next year, playing the Big 12 title game and playing the playoff, because Avery Johnson doesn't lose bowl games.
Well, actually, Bleacher Report lied. Second highest bowl game points. The first one was actually the Copper
Bowl. The Copper Bowl. I was going to say, yeah, the Copper Bowl, they score 52 in that game.
Yes. Yeah. So Bleacher Report incorrect in their tweet earlier. That's,
well, in the modern era of bowl games, you know, post-1999.
Actually, we might have been wrong again, because that Holiday Bowl, actually, 95, 54-21.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, Bleacher Report, get your crap together. Don't be fibbing to Drew Galloway. And, yeah, we'll have our facts in order for the next show, and we'll have everything that you need to know about this game, the entire season, thoughts on that. We'll talk to you again sometime around the weekend for the Sunday show, as I dance around family Christmas and a wedding and everything else going on. So for Drew Galloway, I'm Mason Voth. Thank you for watching and listening to the KSO show. More coverage of K-State and their 9th win of the season in the Rate Bowl over Rutgers over at On3 and kstateonline.com.